As a physician, I spend most of my time dealing with people who are at the brink of capacity. They are at the brink of life itself. They have a life-threatening disease, or their child was just diagnosed with autism. They're suffering. And in the clinics, I see a level of desperation, a level of exhaustion that is hard to describe. And when I started on this journey to go and document where the farming and agricultural scene is colliding with human health, I saw exactly the same level of exhaustion on these farms. I saw exactly the same amount of social stress between husbands and wives, trying to keep the family unit together while trying to maintain some sort of income. The exhaustion that all of you have been through is a testimony to the human spirit itself. We stand at the brink of human history. Never have we been so close to the loss of human life, not one at a time, not as a devastating war that would wipe out 60,000 or a couple million human beings at a time, but the entire species now stands at our brink. It's not the First World War, it's the First World Epidemics that we now face. And the First World Epidemics have taken us to this point where we have 1 in 36 children born in the United States now suffering from an autism injury by the time they're 3. Autism is the canary in the coal mine of the end of biologic function in multicellular organisms. We've lost some 40% of biology on planet Earth in the last 50 years. We're nearly halfway done with the sixth great extinction on the planet, and our children are the symptom of where we are at in that decline. 1 in 36 children with autism is a stunning number, only when you realize that just in 1975, we had 1 in 5,000 children with autism. In 2012, we knew we had a problem when we hit 1 in 88 children with autism. But there was a lot of people who were still arguing that was not a problem, that we were actually just recognizing the condition more, and that this was maybe just our unawareness back then that it existed, and now we were starting to recognize it, and so we saw it more often. But I can tell you, and as being a physician in a room with mothers and fathers of autistic children, that we did not miss this condition in 1975. The doctors may have been able to, but there is no way mothers in 1975 didn't notice that their child suddenly lost their verbal capacity and couldn't look their mother in their eye at 6 or 9 months of age. And at 18 months or something, they suddenly stop growing and they go into this complete collapse emotionally, and they're hitting their head against the wall for 6 to 9 hours a day because that's all that child can handle. They need the pain stimulus to filter out all of the other chaos that's coming in on them. We didn't miss that in 1975. I can't really describe to you the pain that a mother of autism is going through. And 6 years ago, I started working with the Thinking Moms Revolution, which is 40,000 mothers of autistic children from around the world. Can you imagine the energy between 40,000 mothers who are pissed off that their children have been hurt and the entire medical system has no sense of solution or cause for why their child is going through this, and instead the medical community comes and blames them for the condition? You must have done something wrong, you must have had some toxin, or you must have done something in utero. It's a really extraordinarily difficult thing to see human suffering on the level that we're now seeing it, and that's just our children, of course. Attention deficit, asthma, allergies. Children now with type 2 diabetes used to just be what we call juvenile diabetes, type 1 diabetes. Now we're seeing type 2 diabetes. It used to be relegated to our 50, 60, 70-year-olds, happening in 5, 6, 7-year-old children. Diabetes, obesity, 1 in 3 adults for sure, but now a lot of municipalities and a lot of cities and a lot of rural communities seeing 1 in 3 children with obesity. Major depression now hitting a prevalence of 1 in 2. But when half the adult population is going to be suffering from this, and then we turn to cancer and we see 1 in 2 adults now being diagnosed with cancer before they die, the numbers are getting so extreme. Everything's on a rise. Between 2012 and 2015, we doubled our rates of autism in 3 years. Between 2015 and 2016, it went from 1 in 45 to 1 in 36. We don't have our 2017 numbers, but we think we're probably in the 1 to 30 range. We'll probably double that with that 1 in 45 again in 3 years. So we're on track to hit 1 in 3 children with autism in the United States of America by 2035. That's 2 presidents to go. We cannot turn to our medical community for solutions for these children. We are now facing a situation with 46% of children in the United States with a chronic disease diagnosis. 46% of our children with a chronic disease diagnosis by the time they're 18. We can't turn to the medical doctors for that solution, and I guarantee you cannot turn to our legislators for the solution. And the good news is we are seeing complete reversal of autism. It can be reversed. You guys can change this epidemic. It is not too late for these children who have been injured. The fuel that you put on their plates is their medicine. We've been told that since the beginning of the concept of medicine. Let thy food be thy medicine, stopped in 1976. Certainly in 1996, ground to a complete halt. I think we will see a massive, massive movement afoot because it is no longer mothers with autism. We get calls in our org every day now from hedge fund managers in New York City, from grandmothers who just retired and sold their house so that they could buy a small RV and travel the country to visit and encourage farmers. I'm stunned by the spectrum of people that are being inspired by the story that we're telling. It means that it's not just the sick people, it's not just the broken farms and the people going bankrupt that want regenerative options. Cancer, we've been told, is a genetic disease. It is impossible that that is a genetic disease. It is physically, biologically impossible that a genetic disease can start to grow epidemically over a single generation. If it were a genetic disease, we would have to pass this defect on generation to generation and slowly see the prevalence rise. This is an environmental injury that we've been told is genetic. And so while I agree with that, as a former cancer researcher, 10 years ago I was at the University of Virginia designing chemotherapy to give you a sense of my journey. But in that journey, I can tell you that cancer absolutely has to do with genes that are broken and genes that are shut down and genes that are not working and genes that are overly activated and the rest. And so I want to give you a little bit of spectrum of numbers here. Each human cell contains about 1 meter of DNA. Christine is going to be our demonstration here. She's going to hold your arm straight out. Just one arm is fine. There you go. So from the center of Christine's head out to the tip of her finger is about 1 meter. That distance there is the amount of DNA that is crammed into the nucleus in the center of every single one of her cells. Christine is actually made of 50 trillion human cells. The number of 50 trillion is very difficult for any of us with a normal life to wrap our head around. It happens to be equal to our national debt. $50 trillion is our current national debt. It's a very, very big number. She's 50 trillion human cells composed of about 280 different cell types. And in each cell, there's about 280,000 different proteins that make up a different mix. And so she's an extraordinarily cool creature with a meter of DNA in every cell. If she has a meter of DNA in every cell and she has 50 trillion cells, how many times could we wrap her DNA around the circumference? We're talking the equator of Mother Earth. It turns out that Christine wraps around Mother Earth 2 million times.
Yes.
2 million times this woman wraps around Mother Earth. The miracle, the sheer beauty that is in this woman. It's too much to comprehend. You're a spectacular miracle that you can even stand here before us with that kind of complexity. The kind of information you carry in your body dates back to the beginning of time itself. You carry wisdom that none of us have heard before, and we resonate with you. That's how we should say hello. And so we have this awesome amount of information inside of every human body. You receive that information from mom and dad. It's a ton of tiny, tiny, tiny little dits and dashes that create this digital code of the DNA that would go on to be the template for life for human species. And so that's the the strung 2 million times. I do want to just point out 2 million times. Now, I want you to really picture that. Can you imagine stringing yourself around Mother Earth once, and then you repeat that 2 million times? It still boggles my mind. But it gets very strange when we start to decode that DNA, because it turns out that only 1% of the DNA that you received from your mother and father went on to code a gene that would actually produce a structure, like a protein or an enzyme, that would become you. 1% of the information that you are composed of actually builds you. It creates a measly 20,000 human genes. It was a few years before decoding the human genome, decoded the fruit fly. The fruit fly happens to have 13,000 genes. We were a little disappointed with 20,000. Especially because just before decoding the human genome, we also had decoded the flea, which has 30,000 genes. You sit somewhere between a fruit fly and a flea, genetically. And it's very interesting, because it means that the story we were told about DNA was completely wrong. And it sent us back to the drawing board in the late 1990s to try to refigure out how life happens, because DNA suddenly wasn't the template for life. How could it be if so few genes, 20,000 genes, could go and make 250,000 different structures? We couldn't figure out how a blueprint of a house could go and build 4 million different variants from the same picture. But that's what happens in your body. You have the ability to build over 4 million different variants of your body, and you build you. And so what we had to go back to the drawing board is to figure out what was the rest of that DNA, what was the rest of the information, what was the 99% of that human genome that wasn't coding for a protein. Well, we quickly decided it was junk. And so we called it junk DNA, which is pretty brilliant, because if you go out in nature, you can hardly make any progress because there's so much junk sitting around, right? You go out in a mountain pass and you're just like, well, it would be nice to look at, but all the junk. Nature does not do junk. And yet we decided to call 98.5% of the genome junk DNA. And for the next 20 years, we held that it did absolutely nothing, and it was leftover junk from the evolution of being a bacteria or a single-celled organism and eventually getting to this high level of function of a 20,000 gene, something between a fruit fly and a flea. And so we decided this junk DNA was just leftover gunk. But as it turns out, in the meantime, we had found out that one gene could produce over 200 different variants of proteins from the same template. And so we had to figure out how that genome could produce those 4 million different variants of you today. And so it turns out, just in the last few years, we found out that that junk DNA was coding for something called microRNA. This is not something that can go on to make a protein. It doesn't build anything. It doesn't do anything that we could see, so we thought it was doing nothing. It turns out that the microRNA are these tiny, tiny little agents that are coded from the DNA, and they actually leave the cell. DNA stays inside your nucleus. Messenger RNA then goes into the cytoplasm where it can make protein. The beef that you serve is just a bunch of protein that got cranked out of the cytoplasm of the cells within the muscle fibers of that animal. Unbeknownst to us at that time, and now known to us and starting to blow our minds, was that it wasn't really just the meat that that cow was producing. It was producing a bunch of microRNA that we could not see that was going into the meat and bloodstream of that cow, going into our bodies from our DNA, and leaving the cell. And it turns out that over the last 20 minutes or so, my breath has extruded microRNA throughout this room. What we now know is that the microRNA that leaves one organism can go tell another organism what's going on in this body and inform you what you might need to do with your genome to react appropriately to your environment. What an extraordinary thing to have this level of intimacy in biology. I have genetically modified every one of you already. That's pretty extraordinary. you're lucky you're not with me very long, because you might start to look different. Have you ever seen somebody who's been married for 60 years? Who do they look like? They look like their spouse. And you look back at the high school picture and you're like, they don't even look like themselves. They literally became one. This whole cleave unto each other, leave thy parents, become one. That's real. I'm serious. That's kind of intense. Some of you are thinking, man, I should have picked a little better. I didn't know it was like that. Have you ever seen somebody who's had their dog for 16 years? What do they look like? You need to be very careful about who you pick at the SPCA, because they are going to change your genetics. It's fascinating. We change each other very rapidly in this genetic environment. The extraordinary data that's now coming out, and remember, this field is brand new. We're talking just discovered a few years ago. We haven't, you can imagine the volume of junk DNA. One person wraps around Mother Earth 2 million times. There's a lot of junk to figure out. But we already have figured out that 15% of the microRNA in your bloodstream right this moment, if I were to draw 7 milliliters of blood, is actually from the bacteria that is in and around your body. And another 15% is from the fungi that is in and around your body. And 5% is from the food you just ate. One human species, that 20,000 genes, I want to start to contrast that to this thing that we call the microbiome, the ecosystem of bacteria and beyond. We now estimate that the human body should be involved with about 40,000 species of bacteria, most of this in the colon, small intestine, skin, sinonasal passages, the lungs. But we also now know that it's actually the entire human body that is teeming with life. Every solid organ is being nursemated by bacteria and other life forms. Those 40,000 species of bacteria have 2 million genes compared to the 20,000 human genes. There are 300,000 species of parasites already categorized, and they have 2 billion genes. There are over 5 million species of fungi. They have 125 trillion genes. We have no idea how many species of viruses are on Earth. Far too many. Far too fast changing for us to categorize their species, but we do have a good sense of how many there are. 10 to the 31 viruses on Earth. That's a one with 31 zeros after it. That's a big number. That is 10 million times more than our stars in the entire universe. And yet every year the CDC puts out this huge public campaign to vaccinate you against 3 or 4 of those viral species and calls it the flu shot. Because thank God we figured out which 3 or 4 species of the 10 to the 31 are against you. It is the most ridiculous charade of public health that exists is the flu shot. Just know that the viruses are not against us. If they were, you would not be here. 10 to the 31 is far too big a number for you to even begin to categorize in your head. Know that every breath you take, every touch you make, every beat of your heart circulates more and more virus through your body for your own benefit. Your plants and your cattle are full of viruses. The most recent discovery in the world of viruses is the world of retroviruses. The famous retrovirus is HIV that we are terrified of. It causes the condition that we call AIDS. It turns out that there are thousands and thousands of different variants of retroviruses coursing through the typical bloodstream, taking care of the biology that we see around us. Retroviruses, like all the other 10 to the 31, are not bad for us. They are not bad for biology. They are biology. They are the vast majority of biology. The fungi are second only to the viruses. We don't have fungal problems on the planet. We have imbalance, if anything. Imbalance can create the appearance of a sickness or an invasive species. And I'm now teaching medicine to doctors to understand that the bacteria that we see showing up in a hospital is not a weed at all. It's a forb. You need to stop trying to kill the last few species that are surviving in the sterilized soil or the sterilized hospital and let it come back and create some biology. Welcome it in, because if you allow the bacteria to come back in, they're going to bring the fungi with them. And with the fungi, you will bring the parasites, and you'll bring the viruses, and you'll bring life back to planet Earth and to the hospital. And you will not have the same forbs next year that you did last year, because there's a different need next year. And so I'm trying to help doctors understand that we got to stop trying to kill this microbiome and be regenerative in our mindset with patients. This is your gene pool. It's the whole Earth. Remember, we are a closed loop system. There is nothing in the history of the Earth that has left Earth. Even the junk that we keep shooting out into space eventually comes back. The stuff is not leaving Mother Earth. The genetics are all the same. Carbon is not new, nor is it a problem. Carbon is the backbone of biology as a whole. Carbon is the planet. Carbon is your body. We have a way of politicizing and damning flu viruses and carbon molecules as if they're new or as if they're a problem. The problem is our misperception or misunderstanding of regenerative life. It is all around us, and if we keep killing it, we will die. In the medical world, we are now facing the reality that we're about 70 years away from the end of human species. That's how much longer we have to be regenerative, to be able to reproduce, and have enough biologic capacity for life. That seems like a really low number to me. I have children. I would like to see my grandchildren. 70 years is not long enough, so we have to change everything to change that number. I knew that number of 70, and then I go and start hanging out with these crazy regenerative farmer dudes, and they said, you know what, at the current rate of chemical farming on the planet, we've got about 60 harvests left. I was dumbfounded that those two numbers were so close, but then I realized it would have to be close. It would have to be so close. If biology is failing on planet Earth and it is a closed system, nothing's leaving, nothing's coming, it is a petri dish for life itself. And if we are killing life at the biologic level, the bees, the bacteria, the fungi, there is no way the human can outlive the biology we are killing. And so if we kill it all, we will die. We're on course for 70 years. And so let's make sure we win the game. Let's make sure you guys have everything you need to completely kick ass out there, to change the paradigm faster than you think possible. In the United States, we're facing the reality of complete bankruptcy and collapse. We already are bankrupt. We're $70 trillion in debt. We are not going to fiscally survive as a nation past 2035 because of our disease burden. If that's our only problem, we will not survive. So that means we don't have 70 years. We have more like 17 years to get our act together and change everything from the soil up. And so we need to do it faster, and we need to do it more cooperatively. I want you guys brainstorming this year and bringing messages back to my group and Alan and GrassFed Exchange and all of the other leaders in here. Start listening to ideas that will scale us faster. But you're too damn shy. You are too hesitant. The reality is you need to stop being so meek, because that neighbor next door that you're trying to be polite to, being like, yeah, you need to get a little more aggressive with that messaging. Let's really blow the doors off of expectation here. And if you don't feel like that's an appropriate approach for you, then find the gentle approach that is appropriate for you. But you need to help all of us, the children that are suffering, this trajectory of autism needs you to be more outspoken about the spraying that is happening next door. We need to stop the spraying. This is the data that I want to show you that many of you have seen before, but if we don't drill this home, you're not going to have the arsenal that you're going to need to convince those around you to start doing what you're doing immediately. State by state, you can overlay that map of antibiotic prescriptions from doctors and the likelihood you're going to die of cancer. When was the last time a doctor handed you an antibiotic prescription and said, here you go, take 3 days of this for your urinary tract infection, you're probably going to die of cancer. Here's 5 days of an antibiotic for your bronchitis, it just increased your likelihood you're going to die of cancer. It's not happening because we don't know this information, and most doctors don't know what to do with that information. They're stuck. They're like, well, there's a bacteria. I got to kill it with something. It's exactly like you guys feel when you talk to your neighbors. They're like, well, I got a problem, and this is the hammer I got, so I'm going to go spray. It's exactly the same mentality. Their toolbox is too small. You guys are lucky to have a regenerative movement. There is not a regenerative movement in medicine that's happening quick enough, I can tell you. There's a few doctors starting to think about it, but compared to where you guys are at, you're ahead of us. You guys are really pushing the paradigm of understanding that killing the microbiome is a serious problem for the health of your soil, and I'm showing you it's a problem with human health. But it can't be those antibiotic prescriptions from the doctors that changed everything, because from 1970 to 1994, it turns out our antibiotic prescription rates didn't change that much. What happened between 1970 and 1994 was a very stable rate of cancer death, which was all in the Northeast and Northwest, depending on which type of cancer you had. That's colon cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer. That had been the pattern of cancer death risk in this country since the beginning of measurement of the records. And then between 1994 and 2007, we suddenly reversed that map. In 13 years, we reversed the cancer map in the United States. That should be absolutely impossible. That is an injury that is equal to Chernobyl or some of the largest events that have ever happened in the nuclear waste environment. We created some massive environmental injury through this space to reverse the cancer map in that short period of time. Antibiotic prescriptions were stable over that time, and so we have to look to this antibiotic for the answer. It turns out that glyphosate is by far, in a way, the most prevalent antibiotic sprayed in the world. We're now hitting about 5 billion pounds of glyphosate used in agriculture worldwide. It's never been patented as a weed killer. It's not patented as an herbicide, it's patented as an antibiotic. It kills bacteria, fungi, kills lots of single-celled organisms, including the parasites, which are often multicellular. It also wipes out the architecture of the microbiome itself, the mycorrhizae in the soil. You'll lose about 50% of your earthworms with one application of Roundup. It's devastating the soil health, this chemical. But of course, unfortunately, it's not just an antibiotic through some benign mechanism. It does it by blocking the ability of the bacteria and the fungi and the plant itself that you're spraying with it. It blocks the shikimate pathway. This data is right from Monsanto themselves back in their original patents, showing us that the shikimate pathway is the main mechanism by which this thing kills life. The reason this does this is because the shikimate pathway produces what we call the essential amino acids. The amino acids are like the Lego building blocks for the proteins that will go on to make our body, or make the protein of a plant, or the protein of a cow. It's coming out of the shikimate pathway with these 9 essential amino acids made through this pathway that's blocked by glyphosate. They include things like phenylalanine, tyrosine, tryptophan, histidine, thyroxine, L-DOPA, 5-HTP, which in its entirety represents the vast majority of building blocks for your entire endocrine system. Also, the building blocks for your neurotransmitters that would give you the ability to have balanced mood, to prevent depression and the like. We take those out of the food chain, and we're going to see the collapse of normal biology. We can no longer build normal proteins. And so with the loss of all of these guys that are no longer can be produced by the outside world, and humans lack the shikimate pathway because we're a multicellular organism, And lacking that, we cannot make these things up. We cannot produce these, and so we walk around deficient across the board. And if we look at the spraying maps of glyphosate between that 1996 and 2011, when all the cancer map flipped, big things happened. Of course, we GMO'd the food, right? We genetically modified for the Roundup Ready state so that we, instead of spot spraying for the weeds and spraying wheat as the sole crop that was sprayed in 1992, 2011 comes, we're spraying, you know, 85% of all the corn and 95% of all the soybeans, the alfalfa, we're spraying canola, we're spraying just about everything out there in the commodities market directly with this chemical. And then, of course, it turned out that when I found the map of the Mississippi River, it all came together. And so the Mississippi River has a tributary system that captures the entire middle of the country. And so if you realize you're collecting about 80-85% of all the Roundup in the country into one water system, that one water system ends in the last 90 miles between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. That last 90 miles of the Mississippi River is now called Cancer Alley. It is the highest rates of cancer in the entire developed world. Most of the farmers in this area are on their second, third, or fourth cancers. We are poisoning the water of the planet. It is killing the microbiome not just in the soil, but in the water systems themselves. This is the mental health problem that we face here. That Mississippi River tributary system, very high rates of major depression. This is another river system that I don't have depicted here, but one other river system sits up here and captures 95% of all the Roundup sprayed in the Northwest, concentrating between the borders of Washington and Seattle to cause that epicenter. Remember when I was telling you that I've been trying to teach doctors that the bugs that start cropping up are not weeds. These are not the bad guys. These are the forbs showing up in the microbiome as we kill the ecosystem. This is the geographic prevalence of Lyme disease and other rickettsial conditions. The Lyme disease that we are seeing, I believe, is a reactive process, and we find out that the Lyme spirochete is actually capable of consuming the sulfur compounds that concentrate in human bodies when they're exposed to the herbicides and pesticides. And we keep calling it Lyme disease and putting these people on more antibiotics to kill the Lyme. Isn't it interesting that the microbiome would respond on this level to try to clean up our mess? I believe that's what's happening. I mentioned 2 billion kilograms, over 4 billion pounds of the chemical now being sprayed worldwide. And of course, most of that is now outside of the United States, because in the U.S., of course, we're down to like 300 million pounds used annually of Roundup because most of our weeds are resistant. And so now we're replaced that and we're back to atrazine as the number one herbicide sprayed in the U.S. now, which is exactly the chemical that Monsanto came along in 1976 and said they were going to replace, because that atrazine is too toxic of a chemical to be spraying on food, but we have a cleaner, less damaging chemical, and here we are back to atrazine. We are spraying the toxins of the 60s back on our crops again. The average glass of wine in the United States now has 64 herbicides and pesticides in each glass of wine. 64 herbicides and pesticides in a glass of wine here in wine country. Here we are at the heartland of the wine country, and companies like Dry Farms, who are screening the wines that they distribute for herbicides and pesticides, have yet to find a single wine in the United States without herbicide and pesticide residues above recommended safety levels. And so they can only distribute wines coming out of Italy, France, a couple down in South America. But we do not produce clean wine left in this country because we are spraying so much weird chemical everywhere. Unfortunately, the damage can now be seen from space. The satellite images looking at oxygen levels in the water systems, and what you can see is a dead zone at the bottom of the Mississippi River. Up close, you can see that mouth of the Mississippi is dumping that 85% of that antibiotic into the ocean's environment, and we end up with this huge dead zone. The red dead zone is now the size of the state of Rhode Island. The extending damage is now well over the size of multiple states. The water is dead, and it's growing just a few species of of algae that are trying to recover. There's a few algae that can detoxify the water from the amount of chemical we're dumping in there, and that's all the life left in it. There's no fish in there. There's no life in there. And so we're killing the livelihood of our fishermen and the like from the agricultural practices that have been going on. That's disgusting. That's not life on Earth. I think if we had come by a few hundred years ago, before we wiped out the native population, we would have seen clean flowing, clear to the bottom, river all the way down. We have been torturing this river water system for over 150 years, and it's now giving up. I want to point you back for a moment to the topic that I mentioned earlier, is that the bacteria and the fungi and this life that teems within your body is not at all limited to the colon, the small intestine, as we used to think. Looking at breast cancer, this studied a group of women with breast cancer, and they biopsied the tumors, and then they did something radical, which was they ran the tumor tissue to see what kind of genetic information, what kind of DNA from the bacterial world was in that tumor. This is not microRNA traveling through the bloodstream. This is DNA. This meaning that bacteria is right there in the breast. And it turns out that they found that the women with breast cancer had one species of bacteria that was super prevalent in every single case, Methylobacterium radiotolerans, a very strange and unusual bacteria showing up in every cancer. And we suddenly thought, I wonder if cancer is an infection. So they went on to biopsy the woman's other breast, the one that did not have cancer in it, and they found a completely different bacterial species dominant in that breast called Sphingomonas. But it wasn't limited. They found dozens of bacterial species in these breast tissues of the healthy breast. To find out that the human breast should be teeming with bacterial life was a mind blower for a cancer researcher. Nobody told me we should have DNA and bacteria teeming from the microbiome in our tissues. That's an extraordinary reality. And in this, they thought, well, maybe the methylobacterium is the imbalance and it's causing the problem. Maybe it's kind of like Lyme disease. We should kill it. And so they thought, well, maybe we should put all these women on antibiotics, which we routinely do to women with breast cancer and the like. But before doing that, they thought to run the amount of DNA load and compare that to the aggressiveness of the cancer. And they found out that the more sterile the tumor got, the more likely the woman was going to be killed by her cancer. Methylobacterium was actually a protective factor for the woman's survival from her breast cancer. The weeds were saving her life. Sit on that for a second. The microbiome is not against us, folks. It is 100% in support of biology. And when was the last time you got out in nature and really rolled in it? I've seen some of these beautiful little kids rolling around in this audience. I am so glad you guys travel with your babies. I love babies. There's just so much hope in those little bundles of helplessness, right? It's amazing. They can't even roll over, and yet they hold the entire hope of humanity in those little 9 pounds. Extraordinary. When was the last time you got up in it like those babies are today? Your body is supposed to be an organic garden, and you keep lathering yourself up with antibacterial soap every morning and then putting on clothes that are infused with plastics, and you haven't touched Mother Earth in a long time. And in your separation, you are dying. In your separation and your loneliness from the touch of Mother Earth, you are sicker for it. Your metabolism is slowing down. Your immune system and your endocrine systems are not functioning. Your mandate is very clear. Get naked and get dirty. It's that easy. I don't know why the women always look at their husbands and roll their eyes at that moment in the talk. Like, of course you would be for that. Well, we should be for that. Thank goodness. If anybody's got any testosterone left in the room, I'm thankful for that. Because it turns out that the sperm counts in humans have dropped in half in the last 20 years. Our sperm counts have dropped in half in 20 years as a population. That is ridiculous speed of the loss of fertility in this country. So get outside, get dirty. I think that would be wonderful. Then let's just cuddle up together and hold each other for a minute and say, you're a miracle. You are a spectacular being, and I am so honored to be next to you. Do you get the intensity of what I'm trying to bring to you people? We are not living life like we were designed to live it. We're too shy to even say to our neighbor, you're poisoning the neighborhood. You're poisoning all the children downstream of you. You're poisoning the water systems, and our children are suffering from autism. Our country is going to go bankrupt because you are spraying. Stop spraying, please. Can I show you how I've done what I've done? It's very super simple. We're going to do this together. Be inspired to be more aggressive with your hope. That's all you're doing is bringing hope. Don't hide it under the bushel. Remember Christ, how mad he was about people hiding their light under the bushel? He doesn't like that. He's like, I gave you truth. What are you doing with it? Why are you sitting on your truth? Get up. Get more motivated. Get more aggressive with it, and you'll do it much better together. But think about having a think tank in the neighborhood. And in the being, you will be hopeful to the mothers of the autistic children and the women who are dying of the cancers. You are the hope. I don't want you to hide it under a bushel. So how is it that Roundup can be doing that much damage? How is it that all this spraying could be killing so much life? My lab, as many of you know, have been specializing in this study of the impact on human biology of this chemical glyphosate. You guys know about the tight junctions by now if you've heard any of my lectures. These are the brilliant little gatekeepers between the outside world and your immune system, bloodstream, and system at large. And it turns out that that's just the beginning of the package. These same Velcro-like proteins of the tight junctions bond together every cell within your entire vascular system, the arteries, the capillaries, the veins, bonds together the entire blood-brain barrier that protects your peripheral nerves and your central nervous system, bonds together the proximal renal tubule cells that are the filtration system of your blood to get the toxins out. The Velcro falls apart quickly under the pressure of Roundup. And in so doing, it exposes the immune system, which sits below that structure of the tight junctions, and the immune system has to react to everything in your environment. Every breath you take adds pollen, dust, pollution, and your immune system is no longer protected because the barrier is now leaky and you are overwhelming your immune system with every breath you take, with every drink of water, the contaminants therein. Did you know that drugs with the highest level of representation in your drinking water today are actually birth control pills? The amount of estrogen and progesterone peed into toilets by women on the pill has contaminated the entire water system when we are drinking birth control pills. The second highest levels of drugs are statin drugs, from everybody peeing those out trying to prevent their heart attacks. The effect of estrogen, progesterone, and a statin drug in the same drink of water undermines our ability to build muscle, undermines our ability to have normal endocrine regulation that would rise our testosterone and sperm levels, that would rise our estrogen progesterone surges in our body and be reproductive. Our water is toxic and we can't keep it out because Roundup is undermining the tight junctions. Under the microscope, this is small intestine. The green lines are antibodies that are highlighting the tight junction system so that you have a coherent barrier. The barrier is so strong that we can measure electrical resistance just like you would across the insulation on a copper wire. This small intestine acts as this perfect insulator from the outside world, as an intelligent gatekeeper to keep the toxins out and get the nutrients in. But within 5 minutes of a glyphosate exposure at the rates that you would expect to see on a conventionally grown potato, you see complete collapse of that system. Not only is it collapse and leak across the system, as cells get isolated, they collapse in their volume. That, under a pathologist's microscope, is the very step towards cancer. In 3 minutes, we can take healthy cells into precancerous cells with just a tiny bit of Roundup. There's no wonder there's 11,000 cases of legal cases against Monsanto right now for cancers after exposure to Roundup. They're all correct. Gliadin is the breakdown product of gluten that's become famous for causing leaky gut. But what we've shown in our lab is that we didn't really have clinically significant gluten sensitivity. We had a little bit of loss of protection until you add just a tiny bit of glyphosate. This is glyphosate at 2 parts per billion, which is the amount that you would see in a typical drinking glass. And so a little bit of glyphosate in the water, or that little bit of glyphosate residue that was sprayed on the wheat to desiccate it quicker, put those in the same bite of food and you suddenly get an 80% drop in the barrier system of the gut. We started spraying wheat in the United States in 1992 with glyphosate. When did gluten sensitivity show up? 1992. 1990, 91, nobody was really spraying anything. 1992, we start to spray in northern climates. Every year since then, we've increased the spraying rate. There was 1 year in 2011 when we dropped the rate because of some issues with supply as well as some climate things that occurred that year that led to a decrease in the amount of wheat that was sprayed. We see an increase consistently of celiac disease over that next 2 decades. And so we see this very, very close representation. And so my lab's been working to understand the mechanism of action between those two. And we've come to find that gluten sensitivity is in 100% of people that are exposed to Roundup on a consistent basis. But we don't often recognize that we're gluten sensitive because the symptoms are not in our gut. There are a lot of mental fatigue, neuromuscular weakness and fatigue, poor recovery from exercise, major depression, headache. The abdominal pain isn't typical. It's not like, oh, I have heartburn. This is like low-down abdominal pain that happens 6-8 hours after food intake. So we don't necessarily associate all that with gluten sensitivity. But the mechanism by which the glyphosate seems to do this is that when glyphosate hits the intestinal lining, the intestine of the human suddenly expresses the receptor for gliadin. Meaning for all of time of history, humans could eat gluten and it would cruise through the small intestine without a place to bind and cause any harm. And then you give the intestine the injury of Roundup and it suddenly expresses the receptor for gliadin and it can induce the leaky gut event. We became gluten sensitive. We literally induced gluten sensitivity with the advent of glyphosate in our food chain. After 1 year of strict gluten-free diet, 85% of people with non-celiac gluten sensitivity still report their symptoms. They have not resolved because they don't actually have gluten sensitivity. If they have gluten sensitivity, all their symptoms would go away by eliminating the gluten. What they have is glyphosate poisoning, and gluten sensitivity is just a symptom of glyphosate poisoning. We have now done a really eloquent study. John Gilday is my chief PhD in the lab. He's brilliant and a master in a petri dish. He's now figured out how to grow the blood-brain barrier on one level of the petri dish and the gut on another layer of the petri dish so that we can injure the gut lining and show the effects on the blood-brain barrier. If we show the gluten compounds directly to the blood-brain barrier, there's no injury. But if we injure the gut first, then the whole blood-brain barrier collapses. It's not just leaky gut. It's actually leaky brain that happens when you eat gluten and glyphosate together. It's an extraordinary journey into this world of the food was our medicine and now it's become our toxin. We have so much disease burden as we blow open that barrier system of the gut and the vascular system, the blood-brain barrier and the rest, but we should be able to treat it with the medicine because it turns out the medicine makes the alkaloids, or the food makes the alkaloids, rather. The food makes antiparasites in the form of quinine and the like, anti-asthma compounds, anti-cancer compounds, cholinomimetics that would be anti-autism, vasodilatory agents that would block or prevent hypertension, antiarrhythmics that would prevent the heart attacks, analgesics that would reduce the chronic pain, antihyperglycemics that would reverse the diabetes. All of that should be in our food. But of course, glyphosate, with one last injury, takes the medicine out of the food because the shikimate pathway blocks the ability of the food to make the medicine. In the world of cancer, I was a cancer researcher and we were using a compound called vincristine all the time. Continues to be one of the most commonly used chemotherapies on the planet. Vincristine is a naturally occurring alkaloid from our plants. the most rich stuff happens from actually the algae in the ocean. And so our ocean vegetables are a huge source of this, seaweed salad and the like. But all of our other green vegetables are capable of making vincristine. And so vincristine was naturally occurring in the food chain until we started spraying everything with Roundup. And we see this cancer epidemic happen. And now it turns out that all the chemical companies, the pharmaceutical companies that are making vincristine make it from the algae. But they have to go grow it in environments where there is no Roundup. And so they grow it in huge vats in their laboratories. Towering vats look like those huge beer brewing systems that you see that are full of green algae that is producing an enormous amount of vincristine, and they spin down all of the products that are made by those algae and isolate vincristine, and they sell it back to us at $28,000 a gram. That is one of the most expensive commodities on the planet that used to just occur in our food. And so we deleted the medicine out of the food, and we are being sold a very expensive version of it that, of course, comes with a whole lot of side effects because it's now being used as a pharmaceutical isolate and not in its natural balance as it would have come in the food itself. And so we need to start doing things differently. We need to respect the biome. We need to bring the biome back into our farms and into our children and into our grandchildren. So what about the probiotics? Well, I've been preaching against these things forever because I've been terrified to know what they actually do to my patients, because they just don't make any sense on their surface. I showed you the complexity of the genetics of the microbiome on the planet, and then we're going to come along with a capsule of two or three species or maybe five species of bacteria, and we're going to give you that in copies of some 50 billion bacteria a day, and we're going to tell you that's going to create gut health. There is absolutely no way that a probiotic can create gut health, because it is not a biome at all. It is a monocrop. This is just like going to a farmer who's growing corn and soybean and saying, we're going to fix your farming practices. All you have to do is grow sugar beets and alfalfa. It's the same concept. You're depleted of microbiome, and we're going to give you two other species to replete it. It doesn't work. But this article came out just a few months ago to show us the devastating effects of probiotics can equal that of the antibiotic injury. Took mice, put them on antibiotics for 2 weeks, and you can see the collapse in the microbiome. Control group that got no antibiotics, they continued to have the normal microbiome. They then broke them into three groups. They gave back fecal transplant, oral poop in a capsule that had been collected from that mouse before the antibiotic exposure, and within 30 days they had bounced back to normal. Then there was a group that they put on probiotics. And this is a three-species probiotic that is considered to be one of the best in the industry. It's the only one that physicians routinely prescribed to their patients. It's called VSL number 3. And you see this little bounce or effort towards recovery in the first 10 days or so after the antibiotics, and then you see suppression to the same level that the antibiotic had caused, and it stayed suppressed out to 50 days the course of the trial. So they repeated it in humans, and they've studied the humans out to 6 months, and still at 6 months the probiotic group had not recovered. But in this classic example of regenerative agriculture that is this study, if you do absolutely nothing, within 30 days you've got half of the microbiome already recovered in the mice, and at 30 days in the humans that are not isolated in a lab but actually get to walk outside, they've 100% recovered their microbiome in 30 days. That's really good news. That's literally science showing that regenerative agriculture doesn't work just in the field. It actually works in our own guts. This is why Jeffrey Smith is having such enormous success taking people and putting them on an organic diet. That guy's going to put a lot of doctors out of business, and I couldn't be more happy about it. All he does is stop eating the chemicals and just go on an organic diet. Stop with the antibiotic in your food. And guess what? Your gut is going to recover. I'm going to make another movie that says get off your probiotic too. But the concept is micromanagement of the microbiome or the farm never works. Letting nature take its course always works. Giving back nature the reins of life always works. And so we've been working with bacteria for the last 6 years, not with the bacteria of the planet today, but we were actually mining the material of the bacteria that was produced by the bacteria and fungi 60 million years ago. And 60 million years ago, we had a soil health that has not existed since. 55 million years ago, there was a huge asteroid that hit planet Earth, and it caused a huge extinction on the planet. That's when the dinosaurs disappeared and a lot of the other large biologic life on Earth. We've never recovered soil to the levels that we had back then. The fossil record would suggest that we had topsoil levels that were probably 10 to 20 feet deep at the time. It's amazing the depth of intelligence of the microbiome back then. It turns out every species of bacteria and fungi actually make a different carbon molecule. These are the carbon molecules that I found in 2012 in my clinic. And as we started to purify these out of fossil soils, we found that we could create a communication network out of lining these things up with oxygen and hydrogen charge. And so we created these carbon snowflakes into a communication network that was similar to the chemotherapy I used to make. But instead of it being a toxin, it tries to do absolutely nothing on the cells. And so we batch test every single batch we make in Virginia to make sure that it's not doing anything to human cells, because we're trying to make a completely inert communication network. When these are our carbon snowflakes are all lined up together, they are simply passively waiting to passage information from one cell to the next. And that's what happens when you start putting these into biologic systems, as cell-cell communication begins. And when cell-cell communication takes hold, healing happens. This is that same small intestine exposed to glyphosate. It blows apart, and if you give it back the communication network of 60 million-year-old soil, it knits itself back together in a few minutes. That is extraordinary. What I am showing you is that Mother Earth placed in her soils 60 million years ago a rich enough communication network made by the bacteria and fungi of healthy soils that would be the antidote to the killing of her soils today. That is bizarre grace. That is bizarre patience. And it seems like anticipation for our idiocy. Did it? Mother Earth know how crazy it was going to get on her soils come 60 million years later? The speed of the healing is really dumbfounding. It reminds me that all of the disease understanding that we seem to have has been done in a sterile petri dish. Cancer, heart disease, autoimmune disease, any inflammatory condition you can think of has only been studied in sterile environments. When we add back in the microbiome, the disease stops being there. It heals itself. Have you witnessed that on your land? You have seen your land heal from decades, if not centuries, of devastated ecosystems. And it heals in a matter of months, often. So fast is the healing. And the same is true in your children, grandchildren, and you yourself. And so when you start thinking about your own health, I want you to think about yourself as a regenerative plot of land. If you're feeling like that trod down dead soil that can't produce life, then you need to aerate the soil. But you need aeration. You need to get dirty. You need to be flat out in the dirt. Lay on the soil. Look at the stars. Look at the moon. Start listening to the moon again. Start reading the Farmer's Almanac again. Get back into the patterns of biology on life on Earth and get back into it. This is brand new data that almost nobody has seen yet, and so I'm excited for you guys to know it. But it turns out that glyphosate is a direct toxin to a protein called actin, and this is the most damning data we have so far on glyphosate. Actin is the three-dimensional structure that holds the cell in its geometric shape or geometric function. Without it, none of the organelles inside of each cell know where to be, and you get jumbling of the environment. This is like pulling the scaffolding out from underneath a structure. This is like pulling the framework out of the house and seeing how it flaps in the wind. By killing actin, we literally eliminate the scaffolding of the cell. This is happening in just 2 hours from exposure of glyphosate. We have total loss of the intricate weaving that holds the cells in their place. And so we have complete depletion of that extracellular actin that's holding everything in place three-dimensionally. But more damaging, I believe, is this, which is the actin filaments here are now, we're zoomed in on the cell 1,000 times higher power, and now you're looking at mitochondria in the green that are suspended in these beautiful webs of actin. You damage that actin, and the mitochondria loses its three-dimensional structure, and it can no longer produce the fuel that would fuel your cells into health, and you get obesity, type 2 diabetes, chronic fatigue, chronic pain, major depression, brain fog, poor sleep quality, drop in sex drive, shutdown of your neuroendocrine system, collapse of the cortisol, drop in your sperm counts, lack of ovarian function, just because we screwed up the actin with Roundup. It's miraculous that we're finally getting to see this level of detail in human cells. We're down 10,000 times smaller than a human hair now. It's pretty exciting. You're looking into the universe inside of yourself. And these guys that are teeming inside a single cell, these are mitochondria packed in a single human cell. The average human cell in a two-year-old, one of these toddlers running around here, is 200 mitochondria per human cell. That's not what they show us in the biology textbooks. They always show you that there's two or three mitochondria inside every cell. No, you would be dead. You need somewhere around 100 to 200 of these mitochondria in every cell to even stay alive. Hallmark of aging is loss of mitochondrial density inside each cell. And I want to point out to you that these exquisite structures that produce 100% of your fuel that you run on are non-human too. It turns out that they are bacterial in their structure and viral in their DNA. It's a little DNA strand that looks like the virus that's inside of each one of those buggers. And it turns out there's three different species of mitochondria that live inside the human cells. That's the microbiome down at the micro molecular level. And the fun thing that we're showing now is that they can communicate. We can now take the communication network of the bacteria and the fungi, and we can get them to talk to the mitochondria. You add back the communication network from 60 million years ago, and you nearly double the insulation factor in the small bowel, 30% increase in the colon, and you get this beautiful improved resistance. Same thing across here, complete and total recovery at the colon. You give glyphosate to that control, you get this huge 80% loss in protection. This is at the blood-brain barrier. Control, give it back communication network, nearly doubles the intensity of protection of the brain and peripheral nervous system. Give gluten, and it damages the gut lining and the blood-brain barrier. You give it back the communication network, and it recovers. And so again and again, we see stronger, not weaker. We repair and we heal not only faster, but to become stronger and more resilient after the injury. Mother Nature is so graceful in her design. This is kidney tubules in mice, rats, humans, cows, dogs, cats. I lined that up in rate of intelligence there in that lineup. The mouse, the rat, the human, cow, dog, cat, doesn't matter what species you pick. For the very first time in biologic history, we are growing kidney cells in our lab that can bond together and function as a kidney unit in a petri dish. That's never been witnessed before because, again, we've only studied kidney function in a sterile petri dish. And so now we're taking the communication network of the microbiome and we can get kidney tubules to become kidney tubules again and to function as a unit. It's a beautiful reality. We can heal chronic kidney disease, which is currently the number one killer worldwide of chronic disease. Microbial metabolites reduce that mitochondrial stress. I told you that the bacteria of old are talking to our mitochondria of today, and its pattern is beautiful. Reduction in stress by almost 40% across kidney, small intestine, and colon. The bacteria of old reduce the stress of today's mitochondria. The mitochondria literally take a breath and say, "Ah, we were missing you. We were missing you because we developed over billions of years with you, and then you were gone for a while, and now you're back. The microbiome is back, and we can breathe again because we thought we were the last vestige of microbiome as the mitochondria inside the cells." Glutathione, the main antioxidant in your body, radically upregulates as soon as the bacteria talk to the human cells. The human cells are making the antioxidants. Colon, small intestine, liver, all of them making glutathione. we just finished in humans. It was a double-blind, placebo-controlled trial where we were looking at just 2 weeks of putting this communication network back into people. And we've been witnessing this in people, so we've been seeing it in clinic, but to have it in front of us was mind-blowing. In just 2 weeks, we showed that the Roundup levels in the urine of our patients dropped by 20%. Nobody in the study had undetectable levels of Roundup in their urine. We could pick up glyphosate in every single patient in the study. The healthy subjects of all of you in this room are missing the intelligence of the microbiome. And we give it back. Your whole body takes a sigh of relief, and you reduce the inflammation, you reduce the toxicity, you cleanse better, you start to clean up your own system. It's become a national pastime to talk about our ailments. We no longer even talk about the weather because we're too tired talking, or too much time talking about our cancers and everything else. And so this is the course of a leaky gut. This is kind of the course of toxicity from Roundup over the course of the human lifespan as I've been able to identify it. And so our babies, the first symptom is colic, where they can't sleep well. They're very irritated. They have bloating. They cry after meals and feedings. And so colic is kind of the first signs of toxicity of that leaky gut environment. By age one, they're starting to produce the sensory processing deficits. By age two and three is when they're at high risk for the autism injury. If they get past that, then by age 8 to 10, they start to develop anxiety disorder. By 13, 14, major depression comes in. Disordered sleep by the late teens. By the time they're in college, sleep is out the door, and they're starting to develop insulin resistance, early diabetes, infertility. And by the time they're 30, they're at high risk for the autoimmune diseases to be now clinically significant. In a study done in 2002, universally screening girls way up here at age 12, in the United States, they found that 25% of the girls already at age 12 have antibodies to their thyroid gland. By the time they're 30, that becomes a real death of the thyroid gland. And so by 30s, we start to see real prevalence of autoimmune disease. This is also where we start to see chronic fatigue syndromes, chronic pain syndromes, fibromyalgia and the like. Brain fog is now very prominent in this 18 to 20-year-old category. My clinic is literally full of kids who are dropping out of college because they cannot think. They can't complete papers. They can't do anything because their brain is so clogged up with junk. By the 40s, we're diabetes, vascular disease, and then by the 50s, we're into the cancer and the dementias. And so that's the pattern we now see in clinic day in and day out from the toxicity of the environment we now live in. What we've established with giving back the intelligence of the microbiome are those following things. And you can see at every point in the system, nutrient delivery on down, the microbiome is the solution. And so I remind you of the grace of the soil that is now being killed, planting her seed, that fossil layer of soil that's so rich in previous life 60 million years ago. You start to get a sense of the scale of what that must have looked like. What did the jungles of the Southwest look like then? And in that was the grace of Mother Earth that would come to bless us. And so I think that we have a Band-Aid right now that Mother Earth has provided us. But if we don't do regenerative agriculture today and start building this stuff back into the soils of tomorrow, we'll be gone soon. So how do we recover? Once we get the ecosystem back into balance, or once we start to understand the importance of the balance of the ecosystem, this is what I tell my patients to do. And so if you walk out with nothing else, get a sense of this as you walk home today. I want you to encourage all of your children and beyond to start to really focus on the importance of vaginal birthing. If you are born by C-section, you are literally born into the earth without any soil. You inherit your soil from mom's vaginal canal during the descent from the womb into the world. Unfortunately, 34% of births in the United States are now done by C-section. One-third of our children are being born without an organic garden at all. 51% of births in China are by C-section. We are not doing it right. We are birthing sterile children into the microbiome of the hospital. Their microbiome is a few invasive, drug-resistant forbs that are not being given the opportunity to reconnect to their microbiome. And our children will end up with the ear infections and the throat, strep throats and everything else, and then their doctors will have to put them on the antibiotics, which will further undermine their garden. So vaginal birthing. if a C-section occurs, I want you to equip everybody you love with the knowledge of how to do a vaginal swab. This can be done right at the moment of the C-section. When the baby comes out, you simply take a large cotton swab, swab down mom's entire vaginal canal quickly, and then cover the baby in her vaginal mucus and get that child covered in the garden. You will change the trajectory. You could add 15 years of life to that child and decrease their risk of autism and every other injury over their lifetime by that one simple moment. So vaginal swabbing, prepare, because the doctors are likely to say you have to have a C-section. Well, if that happens, be prepared and respond with a vaginal swab. Tell the nurses they have to do it. They've been trained how to do it. They just don't do it because it's not part of their protocol. If they're not willing to do it, then you get all crazy and say, I'm going up in there, and I'm going to go get that stuff, and I'm putting it all over this baby, and I'm going to do that every hour. And so you're either going to get out of the room while I'm doing that, or you're going to participate. You need to be that aggressive, because this is the rest of that child's life in that first couple seconds coming out of the womb. Get them covered in mom's vaginal mucus. Grow your own food. I'm startled by how few farmers have the time to grow their own food anymore. I'm startled that we have all outsourced our food production largely to South America and the like. Their nations are creating most of our fruits and vegetables because we don't grow food in the Midwest anymore. We grow commodities. We grow mostly for processed materials that will end up in the polyesters of our clothes or the ethanol tanks of our gas system or the like. We stopped growing food. Let's grow it again. Stand barefoot in the grass. I love this. This is so important. When somebody was had some jet lag coming in from Australia, and I told them the best way to end jet lag immediately is get your boots off and put your feet in the grass for just a few minutes. It will reset your circadian rhythm immediately because Mother Earth is the source of it. And when you wear a rubber-soled shoe, you can't even touch it. You're isolated, insulated away from Mother Earth's intelligence and the messages she's trying to give you. So take off your shoes once a day at the end of the day and just sit and admire that sunset for 10 to 15 minutes of barefoot time, and you will be less achy when you wake up the next morning. The inflammation in your body will be reduced by just 10 to 15 minutes of touching Mother Earth. It's beautiful, and it works again and again. You'll sleep much deeper that night as well. Eat fermented foods daily. We all were eating fermented foods in every people group on the planet until about 1950, when widespread refrigeration became normal and we got lazy and we stopped fermenting. And so start growing your vegetables again and get them into a saltwater brine and make your wild fermented foods with not probiotics, but with the wild ferment of hundreds and thousands of species that will filter into that water through an open air fermentation process. And finally, you guys need to get up and hug and kiss and generally celebrate the every human around you that you can touch. Better somebody you don't know, because you haven't met that microbiome before. Farmersfootprint.us is the website for our nonprofit that we're pushing out there. There will be another website that will be published broadly through Farmers Footprint that is going to reveal a much larger org that we're coming into fruition, that has three large buckets that we're going to bring to you. Number one is education. We need to educate the consumers. We're going to do that with you. I can't wait to be with you in this journey as we prove that what you are doing is the hope of the future. We're going to do that education. And so we're calling on Soil Health Academy, Rodale, Savory Network, Regrarians, Regen Network. I didn't actually have to call on them. They all called us. They all called to say they all wanted to work together, which has not been the pattern. We do not have time to bicker and be different over anything. If it's regeneration, it's regeneration, and we will fix the wrinkles and the differences later on. We need to get on the same boat and build a big old Titanic to change the world we live in. So join us at Farmers Footprint. Look forward to the future that we're going to bring. Not only are we bringing the education, we're going to bring a new form of insurance for people who want to jump from the chemical into the regenerative ag so that we can help them break away from the farm bill, break away from their dependence on the banking system. And then we're going to partner them. The third category is private partnership. And we're going to bring family foundation money, orgs, governments, VCs, hedge funds, anybody who wants to get in the game. We're going to bring you guys capital to scale bigger, faster, more powerfully to change the face of agriculture by 2025. We can change it by then if we do it all together. And so please follow along. There's social media stuff if you do that. but at least keep a tag, you know, check in with us and figure out how you're going to plug in, because you guys need to be the faculty for this new university forming. You guys need to be the faculty and the encouragement and the social network for the farmers that will join in this movement. This is my team, but I've got 70 incredible people that are behind me all the time, so I want to just thank all of you and bless you and thank you for your attention.